91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Those termed as difficult persons seem to crop up often in daily life. They may be the CEO of your firm, a father-in-law, co-worker, even a motor vehicles clerk. We're often caught in their clutches. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Today we discuss how to best adapt and survive those who seem to enjoy being obstacles and sources of frustration. And on hand is a professional. She's Sarah Elliston, who's written an expose about herself. It's called Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. She says we can be empathetic without passivity and assertive without aggression. Of course, we'll take listener calls. First, NPR and regional news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it's Wednesday's Topical Currents. And this hour we examine what's behind the term a difficult person. Not looking at you, Bonnie.
No, nor you. A few are probably encountered in our family, certainly at work, but also in our daily lives.
But perhaps we've met the enemy and found it may well be us. We're now with the longtime educator, Sarah Elliston. She's an expert in the art of dealing with difficult people.
She's a workshop leader on the subject and has written the book Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us.
And she joins us now from Cincinnati, Ohio, via Skype. Welcome to you, Sarah Elliston.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I'd much rather be where you are, actually.
Actually, you sound a little bit off mic. Can you move perhaps closer to it?
Better? Is this better?
Yes.
There we go.
Yes. Okay. Yes, well, yes, you'd rather have the rain, the humidity, and the 80-degree heat, you mean?
Yeah, we're getting 2 inches of snow tomorrow.
Oh, okay, I understand. So let me say I really enjoyed and learned from your tiny little book. It's filled with a lot of stuff and useful information to deal with difficult people. And now that I've learned how to deal with Joe, let's begin with your background and that story of your epiphany that, in fact, you were a difficult person.
So you want me to tell the story?
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying? Okay. Well, as you've said, I'm an educator, and I was a trainer working for United Way. And at the age of 50, I had a boss who said, you know, sometimes when you do get upset about things, You're really difficult. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And we agreed that if the next time I did whatever it was she was talking about, she would tell me, because I didn't know. So about 2 weeks later, I misplaced a pair of glasses, and I was stomping around trying to find them and in and out of the office. And it was in a small area with a lot of cubicles. And she leaned out of her door. She said, Sarah, come on in. And I went in her office. She said, what you're doing right now, that's what I'm talking about. And I said, what am I doing? And she said, well, you're stomping around. You're having a little temper tantrum. You're lifting papers up and dropping them. You're slamming the doors. You're in and out of the office. Don't you realize that you're just really creating a lot of havoc in the energy here? And I had no clue, honestly. And I said, no, I didn't know I was doing that. I'm sorry. You know, she said, we can't get our work done. So I stopped. I mean, I sat down in my chair and scratched my head and thought, well, she's right. That's what I was doing, but I didn't know that anyone was noticing. You know, it didn't seem unusual to me, which is kind of telling, I'm afraid.
Right.
Finish the story.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I asked a number of people in my life, you know, do you see me doing this? And they all said, oh, yeah, you have little tantrums. But you get over them really fast, so it's not a big deal. But I kept thinking, well, if I've been doing this all my life, why didn't someone tell me, or why didn't I learn not to? And I was pretty confused. And then I went to visit my mother, who was in her 80s at a retirement community, and my father had died about, I don't know, 5 years before, and she was pretty upset about it. She was angry that he had left, and while she had many friends in the community and seemed very popular, when she was with me or my sisters or just family, she got really kind of cranky. And when I was visiting her, as I tell the story in the book, she had this little mini hissy fit, you know, and stomped out of the room. And I went, oh, my God. Light went on, you know, like, right. Oh, that's where I learned it. Well, no wonder I've been doing it all my life. I mean, you know, if she didn't teach me not to, then I couldn't learn not to. So anyway, that was my epiphany. And I, in the sense of like, oh, look what I'm doing. And then I started paying a lot more attention to what I was doing and how people were reacting to me. And over the, I was already teaching a workshop on how to deal with difficult volunteers. And I was pretty honest about saying, you know, we teach what we have to learn here. You know I'm difficult, and everyone would laugh. But I began to realize it was really true. And I wasn't just sometimes argumentative, but I had a lot of the characteristics that really made it difficult for people to work with me or be with me, you know.
But let me ask you something. You found it out at that moment that mm-hmm. you were a difficult person. You realized, okay, and you did some research. But mm-hmm. I wondered what made you say, I want to change versus to react angrily and shut that door. Because you were given the freedom to choose. You could have said, you know, well.
Stick in your ear. Yeah.
Right.
Well, for one thing, I really, really respected this woman because she really was direct. I'm very direct. And most of the people that I've worked for have been wonderful, but not always direct. And so I just so appreciated the way she cut right to the chase. And she was very clear about what she liked and what she wanted. And pretty much she liked everything I was doing. So this was an important relationship to me. Plus, she was my boss. And my reaction was, if I don't pay attention, I might not have a job tomorrow or next week.
Right.
So both of those factored into it. And also because she didn't say, you are being such a child, you're just being so irresponsible and rude. She didn't call me names. She didn't use any emotion-laden words. She said, that, what you're doing right now. And she described it very concretely. And I went, oh, well, you're totally right. That's exactly what I'm doing. But I had no idea anyone was paying any attention.
Right, right. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to give out the number for listeners because I think this would be a good topic
okay.
for call-ins.
Okay.
So if you're listening, tell us your favorite example of dealing with a difficult person, and are you a difficult person, and how did you find out to do so? 1-800-743-9576 is the number. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also radio at WLRN.org if you'd like to email, which might be quicker, and please make those emails short. Sarah Elliston, we're going to take a break in just a few minutes, and when we do, we're going to call you on your landline so that we can get a little bit better connection.
Mike, okay.
We have, so it's a little bit spotty on the Skype, so we'll be doing that when we take a break in a couple of minutes.
Okay, so Sarah, would you say your book is not only a guide to dealing with difficult people, but perhaps it's a guide to discovering that you are that one is a difficult person? I think it's kind of useful on both fronts, you know?
It has been. I've had people come to me and say that they've realized now what their families were trying to say to them because they read the book. And that was not my intention at all. My intention was to say, look how long it took for me to hear it because nobody said it to me in a way that I could hear. So please, if you've got someone like this in your life and that person is in her 20s or her 30s or even, or, you know, younger, sit them down and have a real conversation, because I took most of the efforts that people made with me felt confrontive all the time. They were so afraid of my reaction, and they were so unable to say it without putting some judgmental word in it, that I found it very offensive when people made comments. I do have a pretty good example from last night, actually.
Oh, go ahead.
When I didn't, well, I didn't know how good, is the microphone any better? I've got it right next to my mouth.
Yep.
Okay, well.
We'll go in a couple of minutes, we'll make the change.
Okay, well, anyway, last night I was at choir practice at our church, and choir practice was over, and I was talking to the director about something, and I noticed that all the other altos and some of the sopranos were standing behind me and sort of pulling on my sweater and making noise, talking about my sweater. So finally I turned and I said, "What's going on?" And they said, "Your sweater's inside out." I said, "Oh, I don't think so. It's just got a funny knit, you know, and it's, it just looks, the seams are on the outside." And they said, "Oh, no, no, it's really inside out. You've got the tags here and all." And they made these points. They're sort of pulling on my sweater. And I can tell you that, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I might have turned to them and said, "Well, it's my sweater. Leave it alone." You know, kind of a defensive, always expecting to be attacked.
Right, right.
Action. And last night, I just looked at them and laughed and said, "Well, I am among friends. I mean, it's not like you haven't seen most of my clothes one way or another." Of course, I wasn't going to take it off and turn it right side out, but we all just laughed about it. And I didn't give it any thought until I got in the car and thought, you know what? That's an example of where I used to be defensive when someone made any comment about my body or my clothes or anything about me. Even if it was a compliment, I didn't believe it. So it felt quite remarkable to me that and I chalk some of it up to having written the book and being so aware of what is a difficult behavior.
Sarah Elliston, she is a self-proclaimed difficult person. She's an expert in the art of dealing with difficult people, and she's written Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. We're going to take a short break, put Sarah on the phone, and we'll come back and take your calls and talk to her more.
And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're speaking with Sarah Elliston about her book, Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. Sarah, you're listed as a reality trainer. I guess what you just described before when you spoke, I think, with your daughter about really seeing your own reality is the key to this.
Reality therapy is a process of working with people, and it's a therapeutic model. We also use it in management and education and really in living your life. And so I'm certified in doing reality therapy, which is not really what, I don't think I really described it, although I talk about it in the book.
Sarah, I was thinking while reading your book that changing our behavior is not an easy undertaking. First, you have the awareness. Then you have to have the willingness. Then the transformation, if you're lucky. In between comes a lot of hard work. So talk about that. Not everybody has all those components. Not everybody wants to do that work. And so is it realistic to think that, you know, we'll learn how to deal with difficult people or recognize that we ourselves are difficult people?
Yeah, it's so funny because it never occurred to me that people were going to be worrying about whether they were difficult or not, or that they would give the book to people they thought were difficult. So I guess my title was a little strange, but the answer to your question is the first step, of course, is discovering that what you're doing is bothering other people, and that part of that message is that there's an impact to what you're doing, and there's a consequence of not, or there's a consequence if you continue to do it, usually a negative consequence. So that's the first part, and when you sort of see that, then you say, yes, of course, there's a process of being willing to change. There was a kind of a two-pronged question there. The book really is designed for the person who's got a difficult person in their life. So if you have, say, your sister-in-law is a difficult person, for you to identify exactly what she's saying, exactly what action she's taking, and their impact, and the consequence of that impact, if you can really get that clear, you're going to have to do some searching through and letting go of the typical emotional reactions that we have to people's behavior when we think they're difficult. We end up building up this sort of belief that they're kind of doing it on purpose. Oh, there she goes again, or he always does that. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it perpetuates itself. So the first step for us who are dealing with the difficult person, if you will, is to try, is to work at letting go of that. And so a lot of the book are the exercises, as you probably saw, of ways to clarify for yourself, do I just want this person to be different, in which case it's really not my business, or is what he doing or she doing going to impact our family or our business or our customers, that kind of thing, in which case you need to work up to having a conversation. And the other piece of it is, in terms of helping the difficult person work through the process of, oh, my God, look at what I'm doing, and it's bothering people and it's been bothering them for months and no one said anything, and the shame or guilt or whatever they're feeling there, part of having the conversation is being willing to listen to that and be supportive and empathetic, as you said when we first started, is to, in a sense, be a consultant for the individual that you're talking to, for your difficult person, which means you have to let go of a lot of the angst that you're carrying around about that difficult person first. It's a two-part process.
Isn't the first part, though, deciding that this person is important enough to keep in your life? If you have the choice,
oh, yeah.
If it's not somebody
sure.
at work, if it's a friend, you first have to decide it's worth having this conversation, right?
Yes, because when you have the conversation, the majority of the time, it doesn't always go as beautifully as you think it will.
Right, right.
And for my boss, when she said it to me, I think she thought it was almost a throwaway. And then I said, I don't know what you're talking about. But I wasn't defensive. I just said, I don't know. So, you know, we made that agreement. Yes, you do have to decide. So if it's the person standing next to you in the checkout line or the clerk at some government institution where you're trying to get a license or something, like standing in line at the post office at Christmas, that kind of thing, you might not want to worry too much. If you think the person in front of you or behind you is difficult, you might want to take a deep breath and decide they're not really your business. But if it's somebody that you have a relationship with and you want to continue to have one, I would urge you to do this. It seems like such a tragedy, but look at the years I lost because no one was able to really communicate with me.
Now, you might not have been able to hear it when you were younger either.
Well, I couldn't hear it, obviously, because when I look back, I see places where people did try to tell me, but they my favorite one is the one in the book where my friend kept saying, "You're making me feel," and I was,
right.
She and I, we were teaching something which taught us, was very concretely said, we choose our feelings. And so instead of addressing whatever her feelings were, I said to her, "I can't make you feel anything." And sometimes a little self-help is dangerous.
Right.
Because someone says, "Well, when you do this, I feel this way," and the reaction is, "Well, I'm sorry you feel that way." Not because that's only half the message. When you do this, I feel this. It's not just how I feel. It's impacting all of us, or it's impacting our customers. There's a concrete impact on the world when you do that. And I don't think anyone was able to identify that for me.
Hmm.
And that's why I wrote the book, so that people would see the pieces of it.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about the impact it's having on you, you say to have it without emotion, without judgment, which
mm-hmm.
is another thing that it takes a lot of practice to,
you
know, strip the judgment away. You don't say you're passive aggressive. Explain what they're doing without those kind of judgments.
Exactly. It's an exercise that when we're doing the workshop, it's quite a fun exercise. And actually, if people go to my website and sign up for an email, they get a couple of free pages, and I think from the workshop, and I think one of them is that, where there's a list of all the kinds of derogatory words we use for people, and you're challenged to think about how could you describe the same behavior with a positive motive. So I'm trying to think of an example. I don't know what you'd say about passive-aggressive, but manipulative, for example, you might say that person really knows what they want.
Right, okay.
I've heard that for picky, too. I remember someone saying, well, that man is so picky.
Or demanding.
Or demanding, yeah. And the positive one would be, well, this person's very clear on what works and what they want. Hmm. And, hey, if they're the boss or the customer, let's do it. I mean, why worry about whether they're demanding or not? One of the things I think we often do is we build it up. We hold on to it. And, you know, Dale Carnegie says, it isn't what you have or who you are or what you are or where you are or what you're doing that makes you happy or unhappy. It's what you think about it. I mean, there's millions of quotes about how it's our thoughts that are that decide whether we're happy or not. Here's another one. We do not see things the way they are. We see things the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the lesson in reading the book, whether you ever deal with a difficult person or not, is what you're feeling, the reaction you're having inside to someone else's behavior, is that just because of a thought, like, oh, people shouldn't do that? That's a this, or you've got a name for that kind of behavior? Or is it specifically addressed to, oh, that person is moving his arm or slamming the door or dropping the book or what? Do you see the difference?
Sure.
That felt like an awkward explanation, but I'm glad.
No. It makes perfect sense.
Let's take a telephone call or two. We've got Jose in Palm Beach Gardens. Go ahead, Jose.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Joe and Bonnie have been listening to you guys for years. Thank you.
Oh.
My question comes from observing people that are very well to get along with in the workplace or other sort of professional settings. These folks usually act as negotiators, mediators. They're able to get in tune with people's emotions. But then they go home, and with people that are really close, that they have a lot of level of comfort with, they just turn into a monster. And treat their loved ones, their family, their kids, perhaps, not using the same type of skills or approach that they may use in a different setting. Obviously, you may be getting paid for behaving properly, and that's maybe a motivator itself, but typically we can't separate who we are when we're at our job or other professional settings than when we're at home. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I wondered if you could be a little more concrete about what behaving like a monster is. What does it look like? What does it sound like?
Well, getting along with people, not being difficult, those things, the topic.
Got to be more specific, Jose. That's what Sarah's going to try and get at.
Well, part of the challenge,
So
Jose,
you're Ralph Cramden at home.
So, okay.
And I'm not speaking for myself, obviously.
No. Well, I'm not sure it's unusual for someone who is on all day, trying to help people get along all the time. It's not unusual for them to come home and want to crash in terms of, please don't make me be empathetic and listening and completely warm and wonderful right off the bat. Give me a minute to just relax. So, I mean, there's that went through my head. But honestly, if someone is belittling their children or trying to own their spouse, whether it's their wife or their husband, and say, you may do this, you may not do that, that kind of thing, then, I mean, what your question was is that a difficult person? I mean, yes, for sure. Or what would you do about it? If you were the spouse, I think you could have the conversation and say, well, when you boss us around, or you, I have an example in the book. It's a personal friend of mine whose sister-in-law constantly belittled her children, my friend's children, so her nieces and nephews, and they decided they didn't want to go to her house anymore for any of the holidays, and it was creating a problem. And so my friend figured it out, and had the conversation. She had to have it a couple of times. Because the sister-in-law said, oh, I don't do that. And she said, yeah, you do. And she was able to give her real specific examples. And the sister-in-law got very upset. But luckily, my friend's husband was listening and learning through the process. And he was able to confirm to her that, indeed, she did say these things. And her next reaction was, well, these kids are too sensitive. And he said, nevertheless, there are kids, and we'd like to bring them to Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving or whatever it was. You may feel they're too sensitive. That doesn't give it just means that if you can't back off of those kinds of comments, we won't be able to come. So that's kind of the way that boiled down.
So it's you tell about the impact, then you tell about the consequences.
Right. And she did back off. But sometimes, well, there's also a dialogue in the book, which you've probably also seen, where there's a man who at work is always, he throws away a lot of negative comments. And when the boss talks to him about it, he says, that's just who I am. And a lot
right.
of times folks will say that, oh, don't pay it any mind. That's just who I am. If I don't have a really significant impact and a consequence of the impact, then I'm not going to be able to invite the other person to A, hear me, or B, change. And the fact is, there are some people who are getting what they want from their behavior, and the consequence of changing their behavior doesn't appeal to them.
Right, there are people that don't want to change.
Well, exactly. And if the consequence of not changing isn't anywhere close to the benefit that they're getting from being the way they are, as they perceive it, there's not a whole lot that you can do.
Does that help, Jose?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think this, if you have the skills to be able to apply not being a difficult person, you know, in one scenario, it should be applicable across the entire day. That's just the way I see it.
I don't disagree with you at all. I just think if, say, for example, this was your next-door neighbor and you're observing this, if you can get real concrete about the actions or the words of the, quote, monster, and what you mean by, quote, behaving properly, you know, those were just terms that you used. If you can get concrete about that and what the impact and the consequence is, like if it means you guys don't want to socialize because you don't want to see this guy yelling at his wife or whatever he's doing, then you could just say, as a friend.
Difficult topic to discuss, certainly.
It is. It's a challenging one, which is why I wrote the book.
And the other thing is that there's the issue that my difficult person may not be yours, because it's the difficult person in my life is pushing my buttons, not necessarily your buttons.
This is true.
Right.
So we can't.
We don't want anyone to be a monster, though.
No. I'm just saying in general.
Okay, Jose.
I use that term loosely. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Our telephone number,
great
if you'd
question.
Like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org. Sarah Elliston, you spent a long time in your career managing volunteers for the United Way. That must be a very, pardon the term, difficult position to be in if you're a difficult person.
Actually, I think I was like the
previous caller.
Jose was talking about. I didn't seem to have any problem with
angel,
volunteers.
An angel with the volunteers, but
right,
it
was more my colleagues, the people, the paid staff in the organization. I think that found me challenging, because one of the things that I haven't mentioned yet, and that it's part of this not knowing that the difficult person doesn't have a clue that what they're doing is bothering other people. They're also not aware of how people perceive them. At least I wasn't. I come across as very confident, knowledgeable. People tend to believe what I say. And I have one friend that I have to turn to her and say, that was a joke. You know, it wasn't true, because that's my style. It was the way I was brought up. It's genetic. I didn't train for it, really. And I think my supervisors and some of the vice presidents and principals that I worked for felt that when I asked a question, I was challenging their authority. It took me years to understand that.
Yeah, and then there's Maria. See, when I was saying about your difficult person's not mine, remember that woman Maria in your book?
Uh-huh.
Well, she you know, was just trying to say how great you were or whatever, but that it made her feel inadequate or something because mm-hmm. you knew so mm-hmm. much. Well, that might not have pushed another person's, it may not have been difficult. Maria may in and of herself not be a difficult person, except she was to you because of your past. Do you see what
I
mean?
That was a little tricky because I was her difficult person.
Right.
But I couldn't hear her because of the way she phrased her information. Plus, she had 10 years on me. She knew much more information than I did. It never occurred to me that I could intimidate somebody who was that professional. So, I mean, and that was part of my not being aware of how she perceived me.
Mm. See, there's so many facets of this, you know. I know when you set out to write the book, you didn't consider that there would be people reading it and saying, oh, I'm a difficult person or all the other things. But it really is quite complex. When I first started it, I didn't think I would get as much as I did from it.
Oh, good. Well, I didn't know it was going to be this complicated when I started it
right.
either. I enlarged the part about my life and how I evolved, because every time I taught a workshop, people would say, well, how do you know this about difficult people? I'd say, oh, because I am one, and I tell my little story, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. It was just a quick one. But then I would come back to examples of times that, as I do in the book, you know, of times people tried to say things to me like, well, you could improve your communication skills. I think I'm a pretty good communicator. So I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
That was the only way that person knew to say, you know, you are perceived as aggressive and argumentative, and my boss thinks you're challenging his authority, and he wants me to get rid of you, kind of. It's not that they never said that.
Let's just reset for a minute. We're speaking with Sarah Elliston, who was a difficult person, an expert in the art of dealing with difficult people. I've been teaching and training for more than 3 decades. Certified in values realization, parent effectiveness training, and reality therapy. The name of her book is Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us, and her website is sarahelliston.com. That's Sarah with an H, Elliston.com.
And we'll take some more calls. This is Michael in Fort Lauderdale. He's been on a long time. He considers himself a difficult person. I hope we didn't delay you too much.
You guys have pushed me to the edge. I am completely angry. No, I don't want to give that kind of energy. I think she touched on an interesting point early on in the conversation. I actually do appreciate being able to listen to the entire conversation while on the phone. It does kind of give me the ability to see all sides, because you did bring up a lot of points, you know, about the monster next door, and that's someone's perceived impression. I mean, they may be not really understanding the conversation. Maybe that gentleman's hard of hearing, and the lady likes to yell, and he likes to yell back. You really don't know people's, you know, as humans, we're not supposed to judge other people's interactions. And my question kind of goes along with, you know, where that person says, you know, your energy is throwing me off because you're looking for your glasses. I mean, at the end of the day, you're inconvenient. So I've also always had a problem with people using insightful words that carry meaning delivered in a nonchalant way, kind of saying, you know, you're difficult or you're hard to get along with, and not really understanding how that impacts others. So at what point do you, as a difficult person, not continue to be a slave to other people's emotions, but being positive with your own energy and your own personal interactions? Because I feel like these roles are two-sided. The difficulty in communication is like a two-way street. Is it possible, this is my question for you, is it possible that these easy-to-get-along-with people are just they themselves easily inconvenienced? And should they be less judgmental? And are these difficult people maybe just not – can just be more accepting? Basically, is there a pivot or a shift on terminology by the end of the book that maybe you go in feeling one way and come out, you know, understanding that these words may carry different meanings than are really attributes of your own life?
Interesting question,
boy.
Michael.
Fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah. My response first is that everybody defines a difficult person in their own way. So there isn't a definition of this is what a difficult person is. Honestly, I think I only know 2 people in my life who are so non-judgmental that they don't have anybody that they have little itches with. You know, and I define a difficult person as somebody that you'd cheerfully strangle if you could, and if it was allowed, because they're driving you crazy, and they're in your life on a perpetual basis. But the question that you're asking, Michael, is more about, it sounded like that you felt the woman, my boss, telling me that what I was doing was ruining the energy and people can get their work done, that she was imposing her judgment on me. Is that correct?
I think not necessarily. Yeah, so not there you go. So kind of words delivered in a way that seemed nonchalant, but me saying even so much as judgment. Judgment may not be the word, but that is kind of the right thing that I'm saying. That is it possible that maybe, you know, if I were to use my standard, I forget her name, but just myself, you know, Deborah in accounting was maybe, we're just maybe a little too close. You know, like, I don't know. So judgment not necessarily being the word, but yes.
Because the way I perceived it was that she was describing my behavior very concretely, what I was saying and what I was doing, without any judgment at all. Mm-hmm. And then pointing out the impact that it was having on the other people in my work area that were my, you know, colleagues that I wasn't trying to upset in any way. So I didn't perceive that as her imposing anything on me. I'm not sure I still understand your question. I don't.
My question was, is it possible that the easy to get along with people, like the person you're referring to, is just themselves a difficult person and easily inconvenient? So that where she was labeling you difficult,
she never did. She didn't label me difficult at all. She didn't.
Okay.
I was the one that labeled me difficult. She said, "What you're doing is making it very difficult for us to get our work done."
She never judged Sarah.
She didn't say a
Michael.
Word about, "Hey, you're a difficult person."
Yeah.
I came up with that. You know, I had enough men tell me I was high maintenance, you know, because I asked too many questions or challenged their authority or, you know, challenged their opinions. So I took that label on myself. But yes, I think easygoing people can sometimes be more difficult because you don't know where they stand.
Right. And I guess that's kind of the first part of what I was saying, is that at what point do you, as the, you know, you've labeled yourself difficult or you've labeled yourself high maintenance or whatever these things may be, but these are other people's perceptions. These are other people's, this is their world coming into your world. Technically, this is somebody, you know, you feel, you know, that emotion yourself.
But not exactly, Michael. Not exactly, because it was interfering in Sarah's life because she was throwing mini tantrums all the time. So she didn't like that about herself. It wasn't other people.
Well, once I realized I was doing it.
Right, right.
But I didn't even, I had no, I mean, I used to have.
Maybe you're all difficult.
There you go. Very cool.
I remember having to, you know, learning to go to the ladies' room instead of saying what I really wanted to say in a staff meeting because I knew I would get fired if I said it because of what I thought of whoever it was that I wanted to say it to. I remember doing that. But I think all my life I reacted in defensiveness and anger whenever I felt that I was going to be challenged or
right.
I might be challenged. And that's a habit. And unless somebody says, you know, when you do that, people don't like it. And that person has a relationship and whatever the consequences is important to me, then I, you know, that person,
right.
I'm not going to change. It's a really interesting question,
Michael. For your book. I'm a perfect candidate for your book, so I do appreciate your time, and I would be very interested in reading it, and then also giving a review and hopefully learning and changing from that experience.
Okay,
hey,
thank you, Michael.
I did have a number of people when the book was first published that said, I can't wait to get this for so-and-so because, you know, and then maybe she'll be different when we get together for the holidays. And I said, well, actually, this is really written for all the rest of you.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
Really written for the
so it wasn't the stocking stuffer.
No.
It was for the rest of the family.
Sarah Elliston was a difficult person. She's an expert in the art of dealing with difficult people. She's written Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topical occurrence, Joseph Cooper and the easygoing Bonnie Berman and the easygoing Sarah Elliston. We're talking about her book, Lessons from a Difficult Person. Back to our listeners, Andrea in North Miami. You're up. Hi.
Hi. Hello?
Hi. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi. I think this is an absolutely wonderful program because it's quite serious but humorous simultaneously. And I just wanted to go back to the gentleman who was talking about the person at work who was wonderful and then they would come home and be terrible. And I grew up in a situation like that. And it depends upon what type of work. My father was in law enforcement, and he had to deal with difficult situations all the time. And everybody thought he was wonderful. And really and truly he was. But when he came home, he turned, and he was a different person entirely. And I think looking back on it, part of it was self-esteem, and at the time they didn't have meditation. We didn't talk about people's wake, how they act, and what they leave behind them. And so a lot of people are very different at work than they are at home. And it's making that combination. We don't talk about it in school. We don't have psychological situations. And the place I happened to work for many years, which is a container store here in Miami, they have an orientation where they talk about people's wake because we're always interfacing with people. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful topic, and I'm so glad that Sarah brought it up, wrote a book, and that you're talking about it.
Okay, well, thank you, Andrea.
Thank you. So can I just ask a clarification? Is when you mean wake, are you talking about the energy that they leave behind?
Like a ship's wake, yeah.
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 Yes.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yes. It's what you say and what you do. That's your wake.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you.
And we move along now. Uh-oh. Passive aggression.
Yes, good afternoon.
Is up. This is Tom. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Had a question relative to dealing with a difficult parent who is somewhat passive-aggressive and almost gamey.
Almost what?
Gamey. When they ask a question, you have to always wonder what are the ramifications and, you know, innuendos that are inserted into the question. It's almost like conversations are a game with them. And any advice on that?
I'm just curious. I'm trying to understand.
You mean like double entendres or something?
Well, not just double entendres, but
right?
But they're asking a question that, you know, how can I say this?
You mean like it has an answer where you could fall into a trap?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that this seems to be the norm of the person. And I'm not sure whether it's a situation that, you know, they're becoming older, and this is, I mean, I just don't know. But this is kind of a new piece of land that we're treading here, and it's my mother. And so it's disconcerting, and it's almost making me want to just come at her, not aggressively, but,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
put all the cards on the table. But she is a very poker-playing person. And I don't know if she knows it and it's intentional, or whether it's just her default personality.
Mm-hmm. So my question would be, if I'm going to try and be you for a second, Tom, just to say, Mom, are you asking me that to trap me in my answer? Do you have something in mind that you want me to say, or are you playing a game? Because that's cool. We can play games. It's just I'm not sure what the rules are. I wonder if she knows that she's asking you in such a way that you feel like whatever answer you give, she's going to pounce.
Here's the thing. She won't pounce, but what she'll do is she'll go and mention to another family member, oh, he said this XYZ when I asked him ABC. And it's like, and then I get from another family member, your mother said, you know, you said XYZ. What is that all about? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, my mother-in-law was like that. I had to learn not to say things to her because they got back to my mother.
But this is my mother, so it's not like I can't say things.
I understand.
You know what I mean?
What you're saying is I'm just going to do this because it's a quick radio show and I don't want to tell you to go read the book, although maybe you will. But it sounds like the consequence of her doing this is that you don't want to answer her questions anymore because she talks to your family members about it.
Here's the key.
Is that correct?
I don't care if she talks to my family members. It's just, don't, you know, if you got something to ask me, ask me. Just don't try to put me into a trap situation where I don't quite understand where you're going, and I just answer. If you ask me a question, I'm going to answer you. My friends will tell you, don't ask me a question if you don't want to hear the answer. You know, they'll tell you that about me. So, you know, I'll tell you what it is.
But I thought objected to her asking you questions and you're answering it, because then she goes and repeats them to others. Is that wrong? Did I hear you?
Well, no, well, she does, but I'm not so, that doesn't bother me so much as her I don't mind. There's no secrets here, but I don't mind that. It's just that, hey, it seems like she's got hidden questions that she wants to ask, but has the kahunas to bring them forward.
Mm. Well,
so, Mom, what you're really asking me is, ... you know, I would just keep asking clarifying questions, because I hear you guessing at what she's doing, right?
Right.
And wondering about it. And I also hear you a little uncomfortable with it, but comfortable enough with your mom to be able to say, hey, what's going on here? Is this what you're doing? When you call it passive-aggressive or gamey, it's a label. And that, if I was your mom, it would put me off.
I haven't addressed it with her. I've talked to friends about it, and like, hey, what should I do? And, you know, they've given me all sorts of a variety of answers. But at this point, you know, we're all getting up in age, and it's time to bring this to a close somehow. But I don't want to be negative with it, if you follow me.
You know what?
Yeah.
You know what, Sarah, Tom? I'm just going to throw this out. I'm just going to throw this out that you could say that I don't really understand what you're asking me much of the time. It feels like you're asking me something that there's a question underneath what you're asking. What's that? What that's doing, the impact it's having, is it's making me not want to communicate with you. Something like that. So that would be the impact that maybe would get her into communicating directly.
All right, bye.
Okay. All right. So your book worked.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm glad we had that straightened out now.
Yay.
Thanks,
okay.
Tom.
Okay. Now we're really short on time. So Aaron in Plantation, go ahead. Hi.
Yeah. Hey, good afternoon. I have a question for you. People perceive me as being difficult because I'm pretty timely in my workplace. I always tend to do my research and have the answers. And at the same time, you know, people say, well, you know, he can be kind of touchy if you're not dressed right, if you're not on time for a meeting.
Aaron, sum it up. We're really short on time.
We're short on time, Aaron.
What's the question?
Okay. I know it's a great question, but we're short on time.
Are they calling you demanding, Aaron?
He wants to know the difference between being difficult and assertive.
There you go.
Oh.
You know, if you're on time and people are late. Oh, you can be flexible, can't you? No, we're late.
Mm.
You know, okay. That's not being demanding.
Yeah, I would. You know, this is going to sound like a cop out, but I would encourage you to read a book called "Loving What Is" by Byron Katie, because it may be that you're trying to enforce your values on other people. I agree with you about being late, but you may have judgments about people who are late that you're not even aware of.
Well, we're late right now.
Well, okay, Sarah.
I'm sorry, Aaron.
We're crying out loud.
Okay, sorry, Aaron. Sarah Elliston has written Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. Her website is Sarah with an H, SarahElliston.com. Sarah, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks, Joseph. I loved being here.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening in this hour.
You have a headache, Joe.
We hope you enjoyed it. Our program produced by Polly Landis. Technical and social media support from Jason Zabka. Richard Ives is lead producer, actually the producer of this program as well. Perhaps someone you know would like to listen to this program, or should listen to this program. It's easy to download free audio archives from our website, WLRN.org, and the iTunes podcast, as well as the Topical Currents Facebook page.
Or, you know, Sarah does a lot of workshops and trainings. You could go to Cincinnati. Joe?
You mean WKRP in Cincinnati?
Maybe.
Tomorrow, that's Thursday, We begin with the myths of the common cold. Of course, South Florida's warm climate isn't a deterrent. Vitamin C prevention is a myth, but there are ways to ease the symptoms. And more, Linda Gassenheimer and a foraging chef, Bill Jones, will learn all you want to know about truffles and mushrooms. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.